won't take it, said a voice out loud. No, we won't take it, we will stand our ground. No, we won't take it, said a voice from the crowd. No, you won't pass policy that holds us.
Good morning and welcome to the Sarah Schultz Show, where we the people are now in session. I don't know if you noticed, but we have a brand new opening song. It's from Ida Joe and the Show. That's the name of the band, Ida Joe and the Show. It's a local Wisconsin band, and the song title is No, We Won't Take It. If you'd like more information about the band, please go to the website at www.idajoeandtheshow.com. We have a great show coming up for you today. In the first hour, we have Representative Andy Jorgensen. And in the second hour, we'll start it off with From Up North with Frank Kane. Then Jim Miller will be discussing the lack of rights in our state capitol. And we'll finish off the show today with a panel on the Occupy movement and what it means to be involved. Our phone number is 310-742-1896. And the toll-free number is 877-497-1797. I also have a live discussion online at blogtalkradio.com. If you'd like to ask a question in the chat, I will try to get it answered on the air. So before we start, I do have a couple announcements. The Oregon Area Progressives have an open mic, and they present You in Media is a roundtable discussion about role of citizens, journalists, and the media in democracy. It is at the Firefly Coffee House from 6 to 8 p.m. on November 3rd. The speakers will be Bill Livick from Oregon Observer, Jesse Andrews from The Critical Eye, Matt Rothschild, the editor from The Progressive, and myself. So I hope you can come down to hear it. It's the discussion that needs to happen. It looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. So hopefully you can be there. And Drinking Liberally is coming to Waukesha. Lisa Mux and Phil Scar are proud to introduce the inaugural meeting of Drinking Liberally on Monday, November 7th at 6:30 p.m. Speakers include Zach W. of Blogging Blue and John Sly Sylvester from Sly in the Morning. And for more information, you can go to the website, www.drinkingliberally.org. Now we're going to have Yuri Rashkin. That is Yuri Rashkin is with Defend Wisconsin Weekly News Roundup. He's going to be telling us our news for the week. So, hey, Yuri, what's up?
Hey, Sarah. How are you?
I am okay. You sound a lot like my producer, Bill.
Yeah, well, you know, as long as, you know, you have somebody doing a very white impersonation on the show, you're in good shape. Which is for consistency's sake, making sure that Barry is always with us. So now today, I'll be doing Barry, you know, I'll be doing part of Barry White.
Excellent. Yeah, because I was Turner a couple weeks ago, and you were Barry White kind of last week. So now Bill is Barry White, and you are Barry White. But luckily, no one gets to hear Bill. So
we have, you know, it seems like every week we all get caught up in our own lives, as we should. And then we look around and go, isn't there much news happening? And we start digging and go, oh, my goodness, there's a lot of news. Even though the Assembly only met three times this month on, what was it, the 18th, 20th, and 25th,
there's still
a lot of news coming out of Fitzwalkerstown. So.
But that's three times more than what they met last month, basically. They met, you know, there was only once last month, so now we're up to three. Maybe we'll be up to six in November. That's kind of exciting.
Well, you can say they're tripling their productivity, but considering the kind of stuff they're coming up with, there's a part of me that wishes, you know, they didn't meet so often. If we look at the bills that they're proposing, I mean, they're discussing concealed carry at the Capitol, which is an exciting development, as I'm sure, you know, you're aware well. It says guns may be allowed in Wisconsin Assembly, but so far not Senate galleries.
So that's interesting because people can't wear signs. People can't hold signs. People can't videotape when they're silent, yet you can carry a concealed weapon.
That is correct. So you may want to attach that camera to your gun and see if you can, get some freedom exercise that way, because that seems to be apparently, if the freedom is attached to a gun, then it's allowed.
Or a button. So, maybe you can put a couple buttons on the holster or something.
It just seems like this is there's logic missing here, doesn't it?
Well, it's very interesting because one of our representatives stood up and said, why do we have 10 cops in the gallery? Do we need 10 cops? And apparently most of the assembly just kind of nodded their head yes. So or they are they training for the conceal and carry, or are they just, I mean, if they live in that kind of fear, because that was what she had continued saying, if I'm so sorry you live in fear. If you live in that kind of fear, would you not think your next step is, no, don't let people come in with loaded weapons?
Well, or maybe think about what are the kind of things you're supporting, and that it gets people so upset. There are definitely problems. The thing that I suppose one could find concerning is that around the world, these protests are happening in parks and in city squares. In Wisconsin, the capital has become the battleground. So we'll see where that goes, but that's one story that we're following this week. Of course, Governor Walker himself already admitted that he won't be able to meet his goal of 250,000 new jobs that he campaigned and promised. Interestingly there, his own Department of Revenue reported on Friday, that would be last Friday, that only 136,000 jobs in the private sector were added, will be added by 2014. So that's actually even down 43,000 from their previous estimate. So 250 seems like a tall order that governor himself admits he won't be able to get to.
Well, it's hard when you keep going backwards. We've lost 15,000 jobs, and unemployment is up from 7.4 to 7.9%. So when you're kind of moving backwards, it's hard to create.
That is correct. That is correct. And that's just something that, maybe now that the recall is in the air, that the governor feels like he has to get this information out as soon as possible versus to stall and keep trying to get positive news when he knows it's not going to happen. So we've got those pieces of news. Let's see. Well, locally we have some excitement because, first of all, I want to give a shout-out to all the friends of mine that are out this morning protesting Paul Ryan, who's got listening sessions in several places in his district this morning, something that some would say was probably overdue. But his first listening session is this morning at 8:30, so it was half an hour ago it started, or the protest started at 8:30. So I want to give a shout-out to all my friends out there protesting Paul Ryan.
Awesome. Way to go, guys. Keep up the work. Because he wasn't talking to anyone for a long time. They had a month off in August? Didn't come out. All of a sudden, I guess he felt at the end of October he should do 6 listening sessions. He's done 3. Two on the 21st, one on the 20th or something of that nature. And he's kind of crammed 3 in. So if you guys are really interested in listening to what Paul Ryan has to say, because he doesn't really let you talk back, my experience is he just does most of the talking. You can go right now at Janesville. At 12 o'clock, he'll be in Elkhorn, and at 3 o'clock, he'll be in Kenosha. So if you go to his website, you can get that information out. Or I'm sure if you're on Facebook, you can get that information as well. So
what a great way to spend your Friday, isn't it? You have your Friday all planned.
There you go.
Spend the day with Paul Ryan.
You can move east as you go. You just visit the state going east. It's kind of nice.
That's right. And you meet lots of good people along the way. I can promise you that. Let's see. The other thing that we have locally here is that we had a gentleman who robbed a homeless man who robbed a bank, basically so he could have a place to stay. And there was a downtown bank, and after he robbed it, the note, there was no gun involved. Like the Capitol building. So he just walked across the parking lot to office of Jason Gazette and surrendered, basically asked the receptionist to call police. And all of this is done so that he can have a place to stay, which reminds me of, I believe, a 1906 story by a famous American writer, O. Henry, who references this very scenario. So we're kind of going about 100 years back in time here.
This really bothers me. This story really bothers me because we have, we have Wall Street and bankers who brought this country's economy to its knees, who are walking around free, going to their 2 or 3 homes, and you've got this poor homeless guy who has no place to turn, can't get anything warm, can't get meals, and he decides to do something. So for 10 years, he has a place to stay and 3 square meals. Plus maybe some education. I mean, whatever happened to people being responsible for ourselves? What happened to, we are Americans, we are all Americans, and I'm going to help you. I'm going to stand up, and I have a job. I have money coming in. You don't. I have a responsibility to go out and help those Americans who don't have that. I'm helping.
Well,
I'm putting money back in.
Part of the so-called social contract.
Well, how can we be better as an America, as a country, if we have people who have to rob banks to get food? I mean, there's things in place that should be able to help them. Although I'm pretty sure the GOP have cut most of that out, which is why he can't get any assistance. But there's housing that we help out with. There's food stamps that we help pay for. There's free health care or low cost health care that we pay for. There's daycare for single parents, mothers and dads, that we pay for. I mean, I know these are being gutted. This is what's going to happen. We have a responsibility to help our own citizens. As Americans, with Americans who have money, who have jobs, we have a responsibility. You know, and people wonder why there's an Occupy movement going on in this country right now.
Well, I think in a way, fewer wonder because more understand. And it's been wonderful how that movement has been changing the conversation, isn't it?
It is.
It's
about time, too. We really, that story just really bothers me. It bothers me that someone has to break the law to make sure that they have food.
You know, it should bother you. It really should, because people shouldn't be robbing banks in order to get a breakfast. For 10 years in a federal or state penitentiary. I don't think that's what our veterans are fighting for. You know, this is not what this country is about, and I think it should bother everyone. I'm really kind of curious to see what happens to the guy, because if you're a judge, you're going to say, no, you're not going to get into prison this way. Or is the judge going to say, we need to send a message that robbing banks under any pretense is a bad idea, and off, you know, away you go for a number of years? Because I think there's some important precedents that are kind of being set that way, too.
Well, yeah, I'm curious to see how the judge deals with this. This isn't uncommon, however. This is made the news in here, but on some of the Native American reservations.
It's probably more of a seasonal thing, too.
Right. Well, absolutely. But on Native American reservations and some of the poorer places, you see this is not uncommon. People will get drunk or do whatever they have to do to get in jail for the night so they have food and they have someplace warm, and then they come back out or have shelter. If it's raining, you're going to want shelter. It just, this whole thing just really.
Well, but this is extreme, because you can go away to prison for up to 10 years for robbing a bank. You know, that's a lot of free breakfast, lunches, and dinners. So that, to me, speaks of real desperation of when you go, I really don't understand what my options are going forward. I might as well go rob a bank. That speaks to a pretty great sense of despair out there. That's not just, you know, run in the mill, I'm going to get drunk tonight and cause a fight so that I can have a place to sleep tonight. This is like long-term planning of desperation. That's really bad. Anyway, don't mean to spend your whole show on this particular story, but I just find it such a sign of the times that it's just really just important to highlight. But moving on, a story that was actually recommended to me by somebody who works for this great state of ours is the result of, remember MacIver Institute, our little baby fox, Fox News here in Wisconsin? They came out with an investigation which, you know, for all I know, was prompted by a press release from some Republican legislator or however they coordinate these things. But they're now calling for sick leave conversion change. Because if you add up all the days and hours that people who work for the state can claim for sick leave, you can come up with a pretty high number. And so that's what they did. And now they're saying that we need to take a look at this. This is a huge number. And this is, of course, there's a wonderful quote from Senator Glenn Grossman saying the underlying problem here is that state employees get 16 1/4 sick days each year. This would be unheard of in the private sector, and whether the employees are using these days for family leave or just banking the days for their retirement, it is out of line. So this is going to be something that's going to be coming down the pike here. I just feel bad for anyone working for the state of Wisconsin. You know, that's just that is being treated with such disrespect, and for all the service that they provide, because we look to hire the best, and then we treat them like, well, look, people over there are suffering, so you should suffer as much.
Well, and
it just doesn't make sense.
The MacIver Institute, for those who don't know, is a right-wing think tank, and so we call it the Baby Fox, because they obviously are doing more for the right wing than they are for anyone else. And it's interesting that Grothman has decided to yet come out with another crap bill.
Well,
hurts people.
Having an agenda. Yeah.
Oh, at least we know what his agenda is.
Well,
I still can't believe we couldn't recall him.
Huh. I can't believe it either, but I don't live in that district, and it makes me curious about his district. But I guess that's part of the democracy, is that people there just felt like he was representing their interests, which to me means that there is long-term education that needs to happen, because a man who says the things and does the things that he does, that's not helping anybody. That's not helping anybody except for one or two people with the last name Pope or something, you know? So that just information needs to get out there. And so I felt that this is information, this is stories that's important to people working for the state. The least I can do is to get that out there, so maybe who knows what happens. This is the beautiful thing about media. You launch the story, maybe something good will come out of it, even if it comes out of MacIvering. The other story we have, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, hopefully the bill will not get anywhere, but unfortunately I'm afraid that it might also pass. This is the MO of the Walker regime.
Their pass rate is just astonishingly high, isn't it?
Unless you have a Democratic bill, and then it's pretty darn low.
Right.
It's pretty impressive how they manage that.
While some may not have been paying attention, the story that seems to have flown, under the radar a little bit, is the fact that the redistricting lawsuit is moving on. It was not dismissed out of hand, and because of the number of disenfranchised people that are affected by this redistricting, a panel of federal judges ruled that this lawsuit may continue. So we're going to be seeing a little more about that, because everyone was saying that this is going to pass the muster and everything is just fine, but a panel of federal judges ruled that apparently there is grounds for the lawsuit.
That's great news. That is great news.
So we'll see how that happens. And, of course, in conjunction with that, we already knew that the recalls will have to proceed based on old district lines. So another thing that, you know, Republicans just are pushing through without thinking, you know, without any thought of whether their requests are legitimate or not. They just feel, I think, that if they're in power, then they can do things. Apparently not entirely so. That's a really good thing.
It's nice that we finally have a check and balance to the GOP overreach of 2011. So we've got about a minute left. Can you talk a minute about your campaign? What's going on with that real quick?
Gladly. Wow, time flies when you're having fun. The campaign is going great. Basically, I'm running against Joe Nylons, who represents currently the 44th District. The way it's been set up from the beginning is that the way I looked at it, Joe Nylons supported lock and step Governor Walker. That's where, you know, for me and for most people, that's enough to know this guy shouldn't be in Madison. But now he's starting to create his own record. And he looked at the record, and it gets pretty strange. It's not outright scary. He co-authored a legislation that strengthens prenuptial agreements. And if that's not a salient issue of our times, my God, I don't know what is. And now he co-authored another bill, the infamous Bill 237, that is going to make it easier for police to arrest protesters in the Capitol. Again, what is this guy thinking? And so I'm really excited that I have the opportunity to get him out of Madison, because we don't need that guy there representing Janesville or anybody. So that's where my campaign is going. So you can go to UriRashkin.com and find me on Facebook and get involved.
Well, I was going to say, at least we know where he stands lockstep with the Walker regime. And that Bill 237 I'm going to talk about a little bit later with an attorney who's coming on talking about the First Amendment rights that are being taken away in the Capitol. So that will be a discussion. So we'll get back to that bill. I will not let that lie. That's an awful bill.
Thank you. I just think that placing yourself between the protesters and the governor, which is what Joe Nylund is doing, is just a bad place to be. So Joe is not doing any favors to his district, and this is certainly not creating any jobs, which is what we need.
Exactly. So, well, Yuri, thank you so much for being on this week. We'll talk to you next week. Have a great week.
Sounds great, Sarah. Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, thank you. Bye. That was Yuri Raskin with Defend Wisconsin Weekly News Roundup.
Walker ignoring the people of his state. Won't listen, won't bargain, won't negotiate.
Now I'd like to welcome Representative Andy Jorgensen back to the show. Representative Jorgensen represents the 37th Assembly District. If you have any questions for Representative Andy Jorgensen, call 310-742-1896 or 877-497-1797. Welcome back, Representative.
Good morning, Sarah. Good to be back.
So, well, thanks for being on the Sarah Schultz Show today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, let's start out with where are the can you describe the state of the state right now?
Well, as far as being a representative, we were told that we were going to be focusing in on jobs like a laser. And I found that that's anything but what's going on in our state capitol right now. And it needs to be going on. The problem is, Sarah, since Governor Walker declared Wisconsin open for business, our state unemployment rate has increased 5 times the national rate. Let me say that again. Since Governor Walker said we are open for business, our state unemployment rate has increased 5 times the national rate. That's 7.9% of our friends and neighbors are without a job today, and they are struggling. And not only are people struggling in this economy, but they're also being let down by the Republican leaders. You see, when the Governor Walker and his rubber stamp Republicans called this so-called special job session, I think some people were excited. They were talking about focusing on Wisconsin's economy. They were talking about bipartisanship. They were talking about, hey, we've woken up. We're going to start doing what we said we were going to do. You were saying they were saying just what we wanted to hear, and most of us wanted to hear that jobs was going to be the priority. But with a couple of so-called special session days under our belt, we're realizing the session is far from special. Just the other night, let's take a look at what we did. You can now, Sarah, I know this is big with you, you can drink wine at the county fair now. That is now legal to do. That was on their to-do list. They defined what a bicycle is in Wisconsin. So we've got that one behind us now. And this is a big one. You can now go down to your local supermarket at 6 in the morning, and you can buy a can of beer. That wasn't legal before, and now it is, and I'm sure that that's going to create a lot of jobs. I'm being very sarcastic here, but we've done everything but focus in on jobs. And it's not because the Democrats don't want to. We have a list of Democratic bills that would create jobs, and they would do that right now, but they have yet to be considered.
Well, what are some of these bills that you have that the Dems have put out there?
Well, I'm going to zero on a couple of them that I have come up with, and they're called the MAKE bills, Marketing, Manufacturing, and Keeping Employees. These bills were born in a little factory, a tool and die factory in my district in Lake Mills, Wisconsin, at Aztalan Engineering. I sat down with the folks there and other small manufacturers from around our state and asked how we can help. And one of the things that they want to do, they're unable to do it right now, is being able to go to some trade shows that are from in our state or around the nation and sell their wares, or have Wisconsin be a representative at these trade shows to make sure everyone knows what we have to offer when it comes to that kind of thing. And it's a real, very common sense approach to making sure we can get some jobs in our state, because this is where contracts are signed and then jobs are created. And we do this for tourism in our state. We go to these trade shows all around the nation. We do it for agriculture. DACAP goes to trade shows that have to do with agriculture around the nation. This just falls in line with what we need to do for manufacturing. As we all know, that's the top three right there. Agriculture, tourism, and manufacturing are our top three jewels in our crown. And so the manufacturers in our state wanted this, and so I put this together. One bill has to do with making a trade show right here in Wisconsin. The other has to do with going to the big trade shows around the nation. And when you go to these, you're selling products not only to people in the United States, but all around the world. And let's face it, in hard times like this especially, these small factories aren't able to go or attend these. And if they try, they're not as good as if they would be being represented by the state of Wisconsin. And so this is one idea that makes a lot of sense. You know, you've heard a lot of people say we don't make anything anymore. Well, this will hopefully turn that trend around. And this bill was created in, or these bills, I should say, were in, I wrote them up in January. You could always tell how old a bill is by what number it's got, it's given. So these are bills 9 and 10. All right, so they were the ninth and 10th bill written amongst all the bills that are in the Capitol right now. They haven't even received a hearing. And that's incredible, especially when you're saying that we're trying to work together. We're trying to focus in on jobs. Maybe you don't like these jobs bills, but put them up for a hearing. Let's vet them. Let's discuss them. Let's debate them. Maybe make them better or find that they aren't what we need to do right now. But whatever, they should have gotten a hearing by now. I mean, we're in almost November, and these bills are just languishing in a time where people are they're clamoring for help from the state of Wisconsin to get a job. And these bills would do just that. We've looked around other states doing things like this. Michigan is turning the corner with a program like this, amongst other states. Indiana, others are doing this, and we've got these two bills on ice. And that just doesn't make any sense.
Well, obviously it's because it was a Democratic bill, not a Republican bill. Are there any?
Well, you think so, Sarah? Really?
Yes. I'm really good about observing the obvious, and that to me is just one of them.
I think you're right, and isn't that a shame? Especially in the fact that you're saying that you're going to be bipartisan. Things are different. And instead of these bills not even getting a hearing, we're talking about buying beer at 6 in the morning at a supermarket. I mean, that is absurd. That's what the minority leader Peter Barkas said the other day. This is theater of the absurd, because majority leader Souter was accusing us of doing theatrics. And well, the minority has to bring things like these bills forward. That's our job. We have to show that we're off course here. We have to look at the bills that would mean something. And, you know, Sarah, they know they'd mean things. There are members on their side of the aisle. They talk to me often in the corridors of the Capitol, and they say, gosh, I really like those bills. I would hope we could bring those up. But the leadership just won't allow it, and that's wrong. And that's not what you're sent there to do. You're there to represent the people that are in your district and do your best, not listen to the leadership of your party, especially when they're off in the weeds like they are right now, saying that we need to make drinking wine at a county fair a priority. I think everyone can agree, if that's your priority, then you're way off the mark. And that's where a lot of these rubber stamp representatives need to say, enough is enough. I have to start looking at things that are going to create jobs, and I have to start representing the people that voted for me. And that hasn't happened yet.
So would you say that most of this job rhetoric is just smoke and mirrors by the Republicans to engage in other bill activities then that obviously are not job related?
Well, so far, action hasn't kept up with the words. I certainly can say that. There aren't any jobs bills that I've voted on in the last few times that we've been in session. And for the governor, you know, he had those jobs bills in the beginning of, and they weren't jobs bills either, in the beginning of session, but way back in January. And that created nothing, especially when just in September, it showed that 12,000 jobs have just left the state, over 12,000. So whatever you've done or whatever you've said is a jobs bill, it hasn't worked. So you have to go back to the drawing board. And I thought along with others, that when the governor said, you know, we're going to do some bipartisan bills, we're going to take some Democratic bills, we're going to work on them, I thought maybe the governor had gotten it then, but no such luck. And it's just continuing. And I hope people pay attention. And I'm not talking just about Democrats. I'm talking Republicans. They can't be happy with the lack of results either. It's their friends and neighbors that are out of work. And it doesn't matter if you're Democratic or Republican, independent, doesn't matter. Our state is hurting right now. And for the political games to continue under these circumstances is truly, as Representative Barker said, is absurd.
Well, I want to go back to the beer in the morning question, the bill. I mean, there's so many bills that just blow my mind that obviously aren't going to benefit anyone but maybe a corporation. So my question is, does this early morning beer purchase bill have anything to do with the state influence of Miller Coors?
Well, I'm sure that if you manufacture beer, you'd probably like this. I think the grocers probably like this. But the reason for it is truly absurd. It's what I've heard for people who want this bill. They say, well, let's say you're tailgating at Miller Park and you're heading out and, you forgot to get the 12-pack. Well, now you can swing into a supermarket at 6 in the morning and you can get that. Really? Is that what you heard at the doors when you knocked on the doors? The door opened, and you said to the person, I'm at work, I'm getting jobs, and they said, no, I don't want you to do that. I want you to be able to have, I want supermarkets to be open at 6 in the morning so I can go buy a can of beer or a 12-pack. This is just really how off the mark they are. I mean, you got to have a, they didn't want to debate this bill, surprise, surprise, on the floor of the assembly. I wouldn't either. It's embarrassing. And here they are. That's what they've got on the top of their list, is to get this one done. And it's just so unfortunate. And for people who are unemployed or know of family or friends that can't buy a job right now, this is what the state assembly is voting on. It's crazy.
Well, Walker, Clayfish, Fitzgerald Brothers, Voss, Grossman, and the rest of the Republicans in the assembly, you know, are they engaging in a national strategy to derail or limit any Obama administration activity for job creation? Because obviously they're doing it in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, you see, they have everything they want in the state of Wisconsin, Sarah, and everyone's top priority. You could go outside wherever you are right now, ask the 10 people that you meet up with, what do you want to see changing in our state? And they'd probably say, we want to have more jobs come here. And I do too. Everyone does. But they can't use that as an excuse, not when you have the governorship, not when you have both houses in the assembly and in the Senate. You have to take that priority and run with it, and you have to share your ideas and your thoughts on how we can create jobs or help the job creators in our state do so. But if you have no ideas, you're in a little bit of trouble, and that's why you see bills like buying a beer at 6 in the morning in a supermarket. It's why we were worried about defining a bicycle right now in our state, and it's just that's where this is coming from. I think they have no ideas. And then you look at a bill like I just shared with you, the make bills. They're just sitting there, and they're not even getting debated. That just adds to the absurdity. Now, the Republicans want to talk about a bill that isn't written yet, hasn't been drafted, hasn't been vetted at all. Is the mining bill up north. Now, they're going to call that their jobs bill, and they're going to find a way to bring it forward and have us vote on it, and that's going to be how they're going to hang their hat when it comes to jobs. One bill up north having to do with mining, and this bill is clunking along because I can tell you why. They were going to bring it up earlier last session in the front part of when they first got elected, but it didn't make it. There was some concerns there. So Majority Leader Fitzgerald did is he set up a committee, and they're going to start both Democrats and Republicans on it, and they're going to start working together on this and see if they can come up with a product. Now, we're going to see what we have at the end of the day. But right now in the Assembly, they're talking like this bill's already been done. It's ready. It's out of the oven. And let's vote on it, and that's our bill. But no one's seen it yet, and so it's funny to hear them talk about a bill that doesn't exist.
Well, and they're having meetings about this, and Yeah, this mining bill is just a piece of work. This whole mining idea is amazing. How is the mining bill going to actually guarantee that Wisconsin people are going to be hired? I mean, if there's ads already in different parts of the country asking miners to come up to Wisconsin, what's the guarantee that we're even going to have jobs created from this?
Well, there is no guarantee in an economy like this. But the other thing I want to point about this bill is it has to do with the application process of speeding it up. So it doesn't take as long. I know that's one of the focus on this bill. But here's the rest of the story. This mining company hasn't even applied for this mine. There is no application. They haven't that hasn't even been started. They've never applied for it. What they apparently did is ran to the governor and said, hey, we need this to be sped up before we apply and see what you can do and make that happen. I mean, you can only assume that because there is no application that has been filled out by this mining company. So if you're complaining about how slow it is, how can you do that when you haven't even applied?
That's amazing. I can't wait to see this bill. I want to see what kind of crap they have thrown in this one because I'm sure it's full of stuff like the voter ID bill was, like the despair bill was. I'm sure there's stuff in there that's just in there to help the company.
Well, I can't even comment on what's in there yet because we haven't seen it. And so I'm hoping that the people who are on this committee, both Republicans and Democrats, ask a lot of questions and make sure maybe they can come up with something. You know, you still got to have hope in all this. At the end of the day, you gotta hope that maybe clearer minds will prevail and there'll be something that maybe we can all agree on or come close to something that does make sense in these trying times. And that's, you know, I'm going to hope for that. I mean, there are Democrats on the panel, if you will, that are looking at this. And so I'm hoping that this working group does come up with something and does ask a lot of questions and maybe we'll have something there that we can figure out.
Going back to the jobs and Dem bills, is there any bill that the Democrats have actually written that's passed the assembly?
I think there has, but as far as just off the top of my head, I can't think of what that might be. I mean, it was done, of course, with the Republicans and Democrats, was being the author and co-author, but I can't, off the top of my head, I can't tell you what it is. I can go back to last session, though, when the Democrats were in charge. And if you're watching what's going on, I mean, even though I can't think of one, I think there is a bill or two that have made it through that have Democrats and Republicans on them. But the very first bill we took up last time had Republicans and Democrats on it as an author and co-author. I remember it well. It was the phosphorus ban bill. That had to do with lawn fertilizers and banning phosphorus because, you know, if you fertilize your lawn, you don't need phosphorus in the fertilizer if you have an established lawn. It's only when you have a brand new lawn you need that. So they made that a ban, and that was with Spencer Black and Gary Bies, and they worked on it together. It was a Republican or a Democratic Republican author and co-author. Something you just don't see very often right now in the state assembly. There's a strong push to make sure that it's basically all Republican bills. But that was the very first bill to be offered and then turned into law in the Capitol. Isn't that something? I mean, there wasn't this game playing that you see now when the Democrats were in control. If it was a good idea, it was something that it was time for, it happened. And if there was a bill that was a Republican bill, there was a sit-down between Republicans and Democrats on how we could work together to move it forward. But you don't see that now. You see if Andy Jorgensen is on a bill, well, that's good enough reason to put that one on ice, especially when it has to do with jobs. We don't want him getting credit for that. If there's jobs going to be created, we want to do it. And, you know, that's just a shame that's the view on how legislation is passed, or in this case, not passed.
Well, if the Dems are being basically filibustered, how is it, what are you guys able to do then that's going to help create jobs in the state of Wisconsin?
Well, that's a good question. And I guess everyone has got their own idea and style on how to do that. It's you know, mine is just to keep trying. Because those are, yeah, right now you could say that most of them are rubber stamps for the governor, the representatives that I work with on the Republican side, but they all are people who live in our state. And I just keep trying to talk with and trying to reason with them and know that they're up against it. They have to answer to the governor, and they don't want to have to do that if all possible. But I just keep trying. I just remembered one of the bills that did get passed into law, and it had my name on it. I wasn't a main author of it, but I was one. It was the K2 legislation of the fake marijuana that was sold in and unregulated in gas stations all over Wisconsin. It was done patchwork. A lot of local communities were deeming that to be illegal. But then across the street in another community, it was still legal. So we as a state have said that that's illegal in our state. That we worked on. But there, again, though, I wasn't a main author. I wasn't the first or second. But it doesn't bother me. I still work together with the Republicans on that one, and we got that one through. There are other bills that are like that that we are hopefully working together on. And these make bills, like I told you, the marketing, manufacturing, and keeping employees, are good ideas. So ever so often I'll have a Republican legislator come and say, gosh, those are really good ideas. I heard from my manufacturers in my community, and they say we should really be moving on that. And I tell them, yeah, your factory is right. And so they'll talk about it, but as far as being able to make that step forward and actually bring it up for a vote, they have to, the speaker, which is Speaker Fitzgerald, that's his power. One person is the person that decides if a bill goes forward or it doesn't. So they've got to convince him that this is something we need to do, and it's got Andy Jorgensen's name on it, and that's quite a challenge on their side of the aisle, I'm sure.
So the majority, the speaker, gets to make the decision on what bills come up and what don't?
Absolutely. When a bill comes, is introduced, and we'll talk about one that I've got introduced, and it's going to get a number here, and then it's going to be after a bill is introduced, the speaker has just so many days to assign it to a committee, and then it can languish in committee. Okay, but if it gets a vote taken in the committee, if it's agriculture or education committee, transportation, it comes back to the speaker, and the speaker, let's say it was unanimous that everybody in committee loved it, but if he doesn't like it or doesn't like the author of it, the speaker can stop it. The speaker decides whether or not it goes forward to the floor of the assembly to get a vote. And if the speaker just says, no, I don't like the person who wrote this bill, that's the end of it. It's over. And on the Senate side, it's the majority leader. And that person gets to decide whether or not a bill dies or lives. And right now you've got the Fitzgerald boys as both of those, wearing both those hats, the speaker and the majority leader. One of the bills that I have introduced is to put the Wisconsin Election Campaign Fund back. That was money that was stolen in the budget that Governor Walker said, you know, when it comes to segregated funds, we got to stop stealing money out of those. Oh, Governor Doyle always did that, and we got to stop that. And, well, what did he do? He stole from a fund that when you fill out your taxes, there's a little box there that says, would you like to give a dollar to the Wisconsin Election Campaign Fund? And that won't be there anymore. And the $1,000,001 that was in that fund is gone. He spent it. It's not there anymore. So my bill simply says, put that money back. And the uniqueness of this is because you, the taxpayer, you donated a dollar toward this fund. You didn't donate it toward roads. You didn't donate it toward any pet projects that it may come of the budget. You wanted it to go so your friends and neighbors could run for office. And that's not going to happen, and the money is gone. This is a program that I'd like to see expanded, and we could take this and move it to doing more than it did. But a little history lesson on this. In 1978, Wisconsin was among the first states in the nation to develop a system of public financing for elections. And the system, called the Wisconsin Election Campaign Fund, provided grants for candidates who agreed to self-limit their fundraising and expenditures. This fund was developed because even then we could see the increasing influence of big-dollar donors in our government. and we wanted to ensure that those candidates who might be the underdog, the little guy, still had a chance to serve in elected office. And we believed, and I think most of us still believe, Sarah, that a person of humble means can be a good leader. The special interest and that special interest sponsorship is not the is not necessarily an indicator of the strongest candidate. And over the past 33 years, Wisconsin taxpayers have kept the WECF and the concept of elections run for and by the people alive by checking the box off in their income tax forms that directed a dollar to public financing, and their check marks really added up. And at the start of the year, the Wisconsin Election Campaign Fund had accrued $1.1 million. Now think about that. That fund was built by people donating a dollar at a time, and it had $1.1 million in it. And now what you're going to ask, why did the Republicans think that they could just shut that down and take the money? Well, they said it wasn't effective. They said it wasn't working. And while I agree it could have done more, $1.1 million, a dollar at a time, I think is pretty popular and pretty effective, and I think they ought to put the money back.
Well, in places where public campaign finance is available, there's a rise in women, people of color, and working class people running for office. Is that something we saw in Wisconsin?
Oh, sure. I've had a lot of people that didn't make it into office sign up for this, and if it wasn't for this, they probably wouldn't have ran. And this comes from all walks of life, all different genders and places from all over. You know, and there are a lot of legislators that did get elected into office by using this program. So don't tell me that it's not effective, especially when we have Democrats and Republicans who got the job using this fund to do so. And now they're going to shut some of those same people are going to say, yeah, I got here, I got mine, and now I'm going to shut it down and take the money. That just is so wrong in every way. Even if you didn't check off this box, you know, this is something you saw. Well, I'm not going to get into that, but some people did. And I've talked to a lot of people who checked that box every time they did their taxes, and they were glad to do so. Now they want their money back because it's not being spent on fair elections. It's being spent on things like a voter ID. And something that goes against everything they believe, some of these folks that I've talked to, that's where their money went instead, and that's wrong.
Is there any way to get that money back into that campaign fund?
Well, this bill is what I guess is one way that we can do that. But right now, there are no Republicans as co-sponsors of my bill. Surprise, I guess I'm not, but I thought maybe there would be a few that would say, you know what, this is wrong. We need to put that money back. We said a lot of them ran. That was the main point of their campaign, was to say, you know, there's segregated funds that Madison always digs into, and they take the money and cripple the fund. Well, this is something that's important to my campaign. We need to change it. And they all voted to destroy this fund and to empty it out. And so I thought maybe there would be some people that would say, you know, we got to put that one back. That just isn't right. And but no go Joe on that. Didn't happen. But this bill is pretty important. Right now, we explained the process of where the speaker has to assign it to a committee. That hasn't happened yet. When he does, it gives it an AB number, an assembly bill number. And so that'll soon happen, and I'll get that number out there as best I can. And then you need to call your legislator and say, I want you to tell the speaker to bring that one up for a vote, especially give it a hearing in committee, and then bring it up for a vote on the floor. And that's how we can change this.
Well, is your idea just to bring it back as it was on the tax form? You can check it off again and put them, and people could donate again.
It is. I mean, there are a lot of good ideas. There are other states doing some other things with it. But my biggest fear is that we start talking about all these different ideas and then time runs out and it's not here for the next election. I mean, I want it as limited as it is right now. I want it to be back in functional again so people can use it for the next election and as it was. And then we can talk about how we can fix this. If the Republicans truly believe that it was ineffective and it could have done more, well, then why did you take it down? Let's put it back and then go from there and make it better. And maybe we could do it together.
Or maybe they could have run a study to see the effectiveness of what was going on before they took it out.
Well, correct. And they didn't really need to take a study on it because many of their members have gotten elected by using this fund. And so there's Democrats as well. But yeah, I could have done better. I think this is where we really need to focus in on, Sarah. We need campaign finance reform. If we're all the things we talk about, you can link it back to that. The money that comes swarming in at election time, and the different things that are going on that we've seen as a state of Wisconsin with our governor and who has influence over our governor. He won't, for instance, won't talk to anybody back in February about taking workers' rights away, but a fake call from a Koch brother comes in, sails right through, and he talks to him for 15 minutes. That's a problem, and you can link that one directly to campaign finance reform. We have to find a way to get all this money and influence out of our elections and bring it back to the people and get you elected because you're listening to the people and what they want, not the big donors. And that's a problem right now, and that's what we need to focus in like a laser. And along with jobs, we need to fix that as well.
Well, speaking of campaigns, you are running for the 43rd Assembly District, are you not?
Yeah, well, that's interesting. I heard your last guest, you're talking about redistricting, and my district got put into the political wood shredder, if you will, and wood chipper, and it's four different districts now from one, and so I had to choose which one I was going to go with. But your last guest, you have to be careful because this could go back to court, and everything that we see now that the Republicans have done with redistricting our state, it could be changed again. Now, I don't know what kind of percentage of a chance you give that, but it is moving forward. J.B. Van Hollen wanted it all thrown out. The judges' panel said, no, we're not throwing it out. So that is a good sign that it's going to creep forward, and we'll see what comes of it. But as of right now, I have to make a decision because I'm asked all the time, what are you going to do? Your district's four different jigsaw pieces. So I had to make a decision, and I live in the 37th as we are right now, but that 37th, as I said, is four different pieces now. And I can stay in the district that I am in right now that goes all the way over to Mukwonago from Fort Atkinson. Or right from my house as I'm talking to you, as I peek out the window, I can see the 43rd Assembly District just down the road. And that's the one which goes down to Whitewater and has a big chunk of my district in it as it exists that goes around Lake Koshkonong and goes down to Milton and Edgerton, and that's the district that out of the four pieces that I'm going to choose to go with.
So as things stand right now, minus any of the stuff that if it gets held up in court and stuff, because that can all get real messy and you just don't know until it happens. But as of right now, the redistricting that's going to go through, you're going to run for the 43rd. Is that, and you've come out and already said that.
Right. Yes. I just didn't think it was fair for people to say, well, what are you going to do? And, you know, I had to make a decision. So I really put the pressure on. And when you make a decision like this, you first sit down with the people you love, and that's your family. And that's one of the things. We had to decide what are we going to do, and this one just made the most sense. My treasurer is my father-in-law. He lives in this new district. I'm a first-ever friend of Lake Koshkonong. I mean, there are reasons that I can give for each of the pieces that of my district as they are to go with it, and that one just made a lot of sense to us. So we'll have to move and somehow get into that district, but we'll do that, and we'll follow the law, and we'll do what we have to do. But that's the piece that just made a lot of sense for me and my family and for the people I serve. You know, it's just an unfortunate thing because this, as we all know, was very political. Republicans spent, as we know right now, over $400,000 on hiring partisan lawyers to do this. Now, let's take a look at, now here's the word absurd again. It is absurd in the face that we have those kind of lawyers, those lawyers that do this on a daily basis that already work in the Capitol, and they are nonpartisan. They could do this, and they could do it right. But they said no to that, and they went and spent the taxpayer money, over $400,000. That's what the bill is right now, I have to point out. We're not done yet. They could still ring up a lot more, and there are a lot of people that say that it's going to go over $1 million when all said and done. And so they had them try to keep power for the next 10 years until the next census is given, and we have to do it all again. What we need to do, Sarah, is we need to get some nonpartisan entity like Iowa does it and bring them in and have them do it and just be done with this from here on out and just let the chips fall where they may have a nonpartisan group just go through it and do it right, but based on population where people have moved in and out and around, and do it that way, the way it's supposed to be done. And I'm hoping that we can hopefully someday do that. But right now, it's very, very political.
Oh, especially since the only people that got to do it were the Fitzgerald brothers again with the lawyers, and that was it. Going back to your campaign, do you know who your opponent is for the 43rd?
Well, if I stay where I'm at, it would be Steve Noss. If I move, and which I intend to do on the 43rd, is Evan Wynn. We talked about the buying a beer at 6 in the morning. That was his bill. That was his priority in these trying times. That's the bill that we voted on the other night. He's the main author of it. So we know at least know where his priorities are. He wants to have beer at 6 in the morning, and somehow that's going to help our state.
Well, maybe he likes Coors Miller a lot.
Well, if you want to drink it at 6 in the morning, you must like it an awful lot. I can't say as I've ever had a beer at 6 in the morning, but each his own.
Hey, it's a little too early for me, too, but, you know, my husband works third shift, so sometimes, you know, I can see that. But do you have any upcoming events that you're going to be doing with your campaign?
Well, right now, I'm going to keep you posted. We've had some fundraisers. We've got one developing. It's going to probably happen in December. And to learn more about that, link up with me on Facebook. I'm on there's actually three ways to watch what's going on. If you want to learn about my campaign, I want to be very clear. It's the Facebook is just Andy Jorgensen. And that's S-E-N, by the way. Everybody spells it S-O-N, but it's J-O-R-G-E-N-S-E-N, and you can friend me there. And then from news that comes out of my office, and just out of my office, no campaign talk on that one, and that is Representative Andy Jorgensen. And then I'm on Twitter, and that's Rep. Andy Jorgensen on that one as well. And that's another personal one as well. But those are the three ways you can pretty much keep up with me now. I'm going to be putting up a website hopefully shortly, and getting back on track with doing all the campaigning things. I tell you, it is a challenge, though, with all the different things that are going on. And even being part of the minority party, there's just so much stuff that just keeps coming. You know, at some point you think, okay, this is going to slow down. This absurdity, if you will, is going to hopefully lift like a fog, and the sun will shine again. But it just seems to be just keep on coming. You know, there's always something being drummed up. It seems like the Republicans see that, we won't have full control if this happens, so we got to change it. And that's what it seems to be about right now, more or less, more about power, obtaining power, keeping it, and taking it away from the legislature than it is about creating jobs and making it a better state and starting to be one of the first states to turn the corner in this tough economy. And that's unfortunate.
And with that, I'd like to thank you for being on today, Representative Jorgensen.
Well, thanks for having me. Anytime, Sarah.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. You have a great day. Enjoy
it. You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was Representative Andy Jorgensen, who represents the 37th Assembly District and soon to represent the 43rd, maybe, depending on the redistricting. So after this break, I will have From Up North with Frank Kane.
Hello. I'm Assembly Democratic Leader Peter Barca, and I thank you for listening to our weekly radio address. Governor Walker campaigned on creating jobs. His promise had no caveats. His promise didn't specify that he would do it only if it was easy. His promise did not allow him to point the finger and blame the federal government. His promise was plain and simple: create 250,000 jobs. This caught my full attention during the campaign. But this past week, Governor Walker's own administration said he would fall drastically short of his campaign promise to create 250,000 jobs. And in September, over 12,000 jobs were lost as a direct result of Walker's failed policies that have divided and polarized our state. And since Governor Walker signed his budget into law, Wisconsin has lost nearly 23,000 jobs. It almost seems as if the governor is ready to throw in the towel. Governor Walker, don't throw in the towel. Reassess your initiatives. Redouble your efforts. Work with Democrats, and we will help you to achieve your centerpiece campaign promise. At the Racine Jobs Now hearing earlier this week, I heard from scores of talented and articulate citizens, many of whom are unemployed despite being educated and with strong work records. The job seekers I met with in Racine do not want Walker to change the subject, and they don't want to hear excuses. They desperately want jobs, and they want us to take action now. Democrats have been ready since January with a dozen economic development bills that would immediately put Wisconsin workers back on the job. Earlier this week, Democrats in the Assembly pleaded with Republicans to take up two bills that would have helped small businesses put job seekers back to work and would have grown Wisconsin's renewable energy economy. But Republicans rejected both motions. Governor Walker and the Republicans continue to knock the wind out of Wisconsin's economy by refusing to change tactics, focus on jobs, and undo the harm they have caused to working middle-class families. Unfortunately, it seems Governor Walker thinks if he changes the subject or blames others for his failures, he'll be able to save his own job while Wisconsin families continue to struggle. Governor Walker's agenda has caused unemployment to rise at over four times the national average. It's time for Governor Walker to show the urgency needed to help the working people of our state. It's time for Governor Walker to worry less about his own job and instead prioritize creating immediate economic opportunities for Wisconsinites. It's time for leadership that Wisconsin workers and families can believe will take job creation seriously.
Well, welcome back. I would like to welcome from up north with Frank Kane. Actually, Frank is the gentleman. Good morning. How are you? Welcome to the Sarah Schultz Show again, Frank.
Well, I'm pleased to be here. And a pleasant morning it is up here in Northwoods.
Well, I was going to say, what is going on news-wise now in the northern part of this great state of ours?
Well, let's start over in Michigan. We met with folks from the UP that have been very involved with the mining in the Upper Peninsula. And as you know, that's what we're about up here in northern Wisconsin right now, too. And there are a collection of organizations over there that have put together a consortium that they're beginning a outreach and empowerment program in their communities, and they've asked to have Save the Water's Edge join them with webpage assistance, and I've been over making some presentations in the UP, and I'm actually very excited about that because it's the same companies, it's the same ore body, it's the same Pinoki Hills, Pinoki Range, they call it over in the UP, and I think by working together we'll have a bigger impact on how we can mobilize our communities.
Well, and I was going to say, for those of you who don't know, the Pinoki Mountain Range does actually reach into northern Michigan in the UP, so it covers both states.
It does, and actually the Pinokis are an extension of the Iron Range up in Minnesota. So eventually we hope to spend some time with the Minnesota people, and there are a couple of folks up there. One of them has just moved to Madison, actually, and then a fellow by the name of Bob Tammen that has spent his life working in the mines, and he's been very, very helpful in talking about the mining technology and the processes and the procedures they use. So we have good teachers right now that are helping us all learn more about who we're dealing with and what we can expect.
Well, and you guys, the UP and Wisconsin grassroots organizations are working together, aren't they, to try to fight this mine?
Well, we are now. I think we've finally formalized a relationship. And up until now, it has always been all kind of catch-as-catch-can. We're looking at actually establishing a joint conference this summer, and we're looking at setting up a schedule of meetings so we can sit down and get to know each other and get to understand the issues. And I think that eventually we will spread that into other areas of Wisconsin and address, you know, some of the gold mining things that are going on, some of the silver mining, certainly the sand mining, the frac sand business down around Bloomer's Spooner area, which, you know, right now we don't know a lot about, but as we share information, we become stronger. Right now, when we deal with these companies, it's information is the tool, is the real weapon, because so often the truth is clouded in those little catchphrases like what could be, what should be, well, we could do this, or we have three options, and as these things are laid out, there's never any specifics that come forth. And that's what we're concerned about, because it's always the devil in the details that we end up busting with down the pike.
What is some of the other news going on up there? You guys had a recall, didn't you, up in Ashland, the mayor?
We had a recall. They tried to organize a recall on Bill Whalen, and I never was quite sure who the they were. About 30% of the people voted in the recall, 30% of the eligible voters, and Bill received over 50% of the votes. So he, I think, was really happy with that. And I think the recall is over and he will remain mayor. And there wasn't, 30%, I don't think, was a real high voter turnout. And for him to collect over half of those votes, it was a pretty resounding win for him and for his policies. So I think most people in town were pretty pleased with Mayor Whalen's success, and now he can move on and continue trying to make sense out of Ashland, as every other mayor is trying to do as town chairman, to make sense out of policies and make their communities safer, nicer places to live.
I was going to say the recall was a little weird because there were some questions about open government, but it was all kind of very vague. Unlike the Sheboygan mayor who went on a 3-day drinking binge, this one in Ashland was kind of strange and vague. So it's interesting that he won by a landslide.
Well, the Sheboygan situation was pretty cut and dried. With Mayor Whalen, it was, well, his government wasn't open enough, and he wasn't consistent enough, and he wasn't this, and he wasn't that. There was never any real evidence that he deserved a recall. And the four people running, one of those folks has just been on the city council forever, and it's just been a nuisance to most of the mayors. And then two or three of the other people who were running said, well, they really weren't positive why they were running. They just thought that they should step up to the plate, and they'd been thinking about running. So there never was an issue out there that would, in the real world, I guess, as I describe it, that would have led anyone to support recalling Bill Whalen. No matter who you are in public office, you don't please everyone. And sometimes you elect people and let them stay there and muddle through it and try out their ideas. And 4 years later, you have a chance to make another choice. So I think Mr. Whalen is I don't know him very well at all, but he's always been very personable and very polite and very organized and seems to be a nice man, and I wish him success in the remainder of his term.
Now, didn't a company just go down or close its doors up there as well. And that's huge. There's not many companies up north anymore, and having another one close is a huge deal.
Well, it is a huge deal. And this was some 30, 40 miles, 50 miles south of Ashland. Weathershield closed its doors. I think the Shield family has probably closed a couple of plants in the region. The workers, from what I understand, at the Weathershield plant in Park Falls have all been offered employment in another one of their plants somewhere in the region. And I don't know how many people have taken company up on that or not, but I do know that they have made an attempt to keep the people employed, which doesn't help Park Falls. There are roughly 150 plus jobs, and there may be more, but at least 150 positions that are lost. And of course, there's a very large facility there, and the city raised some issues on the tax package and the incentive package that Weathershield was given to open up the plant, and felt that maybe it's costing the city, the taxpayers, some dollars to make that up. Not real clear on what that is, you know, all the nuances of that, and if it becomes an issue, we'll track it much more closely. But for now, it is devastating to Park Falls and into the region to lose those positions. And I'm sure downstate, 150 jobs isn't quite as dramatic as it is up here. But we don't have a lot of people that live here. So, you know, you take a county of 15,000 people, and you figure out that 15,000 people, maybe 25% of them are actually employed if you take away, you know, the elders, the retired people, the kids. 150 jobs are pretty significant. So we hope the best. We wish the best for the workers. We certainly are disappointed that the Shield family had to close the plant, but we do wish them the best. The workers at Park Falls did make every effort to work with the employers to keep the factory. They gave up, 20% in wage packages. Over the last couple of years, they've given up 9 paid holidays. Their 401k plan, they gave that up. So that's pretty significant. And, of course, Weathershield closing is a sign of the times. They primarily made patio doors and entry doors at the facility, and there's no demand because there just isn't, as we all know, much building going on. So that's disappointing. On the other hand, since we have those disappointments, we do have a couple of issues that have occurred regionally, and by regionally I mean throughout the Lake Superior bioregion, and we can start up in Ely, Minnesota, one of the townships, and we're actually trying to get the actual resolutions that were passed. One of the townships has passed a resolution saying that they're not going to allow the mining companies to cross their property to get to land that they were going to develop for mining. And, of course, Minnesota is taking another look at mining, and there seems to be a step back in actually looking at what is the effect of mining in Minnesota? What has the long-term effect been? And we're really looking forward to some, we hope, unbiased economic studies that give us a regional picture of what mining has done, what are the problems that have been left behind. And some places on the, for instance, the St. Louis River, there's no wild rice growing. And, of course, that testimony was introduced yesterday at the Hurley hearing, which we will talk about later. But so there's a growing concern. And I think some of that growing concern is the change in the dynamics, the change in the who lives here. It's slowly becoming a retirement area in northern Wisconsin. People are moving here for different reasons. A lot of our younger people get college degrees and leave. Arguments are made, well, if we start mining Minnesota, Michigan, northern Wisconsin, that'll give our young people a reason to stay here. And others are organizing arguments or at least discussion papers of saying, well, there are many other ways that we can make the whole region more attractive for younger people to stay here or to move up here and live. And those efforts have been around for, oh, gosh, years, but they're actually coming to fruition now because I think that we're recognizing that something definitely needs to be done to boost the economy.
Well, we have about 2 minutes, so why don't we talk about the Hurley meeting real fast? That was the mining committee meeting, wasn't it?
Well, that was sort of the mining committee meeting. I don't know even if the committee members knew why they were here. It was the Committee on Jobs, Economy, and Small Business. And, of course, the mining company, Bill Williams, who is a lobbyist and also a mining engineer, I believe, for GTAC, was presented as somewhat of an expert, and he covered the rules and regulations and why everything needs to be changed because we're wasting time, we're taking too much time, and we got to get rid of these contested case hearings, and we really have to limit public input. And what we want is something that's cut and dried. Now, what GTAC wants is a procedure that says to them, these are the 7 things or the 15 things that they have to address. And if they address these things, and you know, I'll push the envelope a little bit and say that if that process is finished and then a month later they're doing some work and they find arsenic, well, that's not part of the process anymore. And that's where the contested case hearings were so important and where public input was so important. And I think what our committee has ignored, the Committee on Jobs, Economy, and Small Business, which is chaired by Mary Williams, they've kind of ignored the fact that in a healthy society, especially in a democracy, experts are on tap, not on top. And we're putting our experts on top. So they will come around, they being Bill Williams, I'll give you a quote of his, said, well, when we're done with this, we'll just create a ecosystem. Well, you know, not a person on the committee challenged that. No one challenged that. And towards the very end, until the citizens had a chance to speak, and that was challenged. We have a perfectly good ecosystem now. Why would we go back and start recreating another one? You know, it's what drives society. We have a lot of information. We have a lot of data. And we just no longer have the wisdom anymore to say no. Because we can dream about doing something doesn't mean we need to go ahead and do it. And there are so many issues with the Pinokies and the water, which are just not addressed. Jobs, mentioned 50, 60 times, water, 5 or 6.
Well, and this is talking about a bill that's not even been written yet, or a bill that's not even out yet. So it's interesting. It'll be interesting to know how much that costs taxpayers to have everyone go up and talk about a bill that isn't even been introduced to the legislature yet.
Well, that's a Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce plan that Tim Sullivan now works for the Mining Coalition of Wisconsin. That's a corporate position to say, well, let's let's talk about a bill that's not been written. So everything that comes up in a public hearing or comes up in any discussion, we can address. Now, we also can build in the loopholes, the waivers, and the variances. And the question from one of the committee members was put to Mike Wiggins, who was tribal chairman, after a series of 10 points were laid out. And the question was, okay, we want a yes-no answer. If all of these issues are addressed, would you support the mine? Well, Mike gave the only answer a reasonable person could give when he said, personally, no. But they want to box us into a corner to say, we're going to do all of these things, and if we do that, you will now support the mine, which is, in a sense, government committees, elected committees coming around and convincing us that the mine is our idea and we really want it and we really need it. And many people testified and said, speed up the process, but don't change the conditions, don't change the rules, don't change the regulations. Well, right now we don't have the capacity in our Department of Natural Resources to speed up the process, because if it isn't a mandatory layoff, they're not filling positions. And there are questions that will take more than a year to get an answer for. Well, Neil Kedzie, at his hearing with the Senate Select Committee on Jobs for Mines, said, well, if they have 20 days, if we give the DNR 20 days to answer a question, if they can't come up with an answer, then the company gets a permit. That's shame on them. Well, I thought maybe he meant shame on the company. He meant shame on the DNR. These are the very people who are representing and working for us, and so should Neil Kedzie be working for us. But I think some of these senators and these representatives are really lost in this process because they're not spending the time. We had 15 people up here yesterday from the assembly sitting in a large group, and there were one, two, three, four, or five others that came up to observe what was going on. I mean, this was a mental exercise for people to come up and say, well, we're going to take evidence. We're going to listen to what you say. No, they were analyzing. Everyone was sitting there analyzing and saying, how are we going to work the deal?
Frank?
Yes.
I got to end it there, buddy. We went way over, and I have a very patient Jim Miller waiting. So I want to thank you so much. I wanted you to talk a little bit about the Hurley Committee. We'll see if we can't maybe touch on it next week, and want to talk about some of the cleanup that the loggers have to do from the storms and other things. So thank you so much for being on, and I'll talk with you next week.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Bye, Frank. That was Frank Kane. He does he's from up north. He's actually from Ashland, so he's talking to us from Ashland right now, or was. And he'll be on next week to try to – I'll try to limit what he has to say a little more, but I wanted to hear what happened with the Hurley committee meeting, because it's something that I didn't get to hear and most people couldn't go up and listen to. So coming up next is Jim Miller.
Actually – under Assembly Rule 26, only credentialed members of the press are allowed to use recording devices in this chamber. Guests may not.
The rule that we have, you say that it affects constitutionally protected speech. I'm not an attorney either, but I know that the Supreme Court has long held that restrictions on freedom of speech in the time, the place, and the manner in which the speech takes place are completely legitimate. The time, the place, and the manner. No one is restricting anyone's right to come to the Capitol with a sign. But at certain places, there's a rule against that. It's not the right time, and it's not the right place, and that wouldn't be the right manner. There, it's completely legitimate, in my view, under the Wisconsin Constitution, Article 4, Section 8, where the Assembly gets to write their own rules, for the Assembly to write rules regulating the time, the place, and the manner of speech. And so I'm opposed to the resolution. It's not the right thing for the Assembly. Thank you.
Now I'd like to introduce Jim Miller. Jim, welcome to the Sarah Schultz Show today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well,
enjoyed
let me...
And no problem with running over with Frank. I enjoyed hearing about the mining issue because one of the people that comes down quite often from that area is Barbara Witt, for helping us with the protests and our free speech issues in Madison, and she's been very active on the mine issue. So it was good that you had him speaking about that.
Yeah, that's a big thing up north, and every time he comes on, that's what we're going to discuss a little bit about, because all I hear from people up north is mine, mine, mine. So I want to keep talking about it. As long as they're talking about it, I'm talking about it. So.
Well, and down here in Madison, we're talking about our First Amendment rights of speech, and under the Wisconsin Constitution, our right to assemble and petition the government, and that's being trampled on right now.
Exactly. Well, let me give a really quick intro to Jim. He received a law degree from University of Wisconsin-Madison. Jim has a general practice of law with special interest in election law, public records, open meetings, constitutionally protected activities, will, probate, real estate, and mortgage, organizer of Team USA Mortgage. He's also director of Wisconsin Counts LTD, an educational organization working for election integrity, co-founder of and general counsel for Wisconsin Citizens for Election Protection. Also, that's on Facebook, and also at www.electionprotectionwisconsin.com, which is a group advocating hand counting of votes in order to prevent and detect election fraud. He's the founder of the Center of Direct Representation, an organization promoting direct representation as the alternative to winner takes all single representation district elections. He has also been Senate State Administrative Assistant, Senate Committee Clerk, Democratic candidate in the 57th Assembly District, and former chair and governor candidate for the Libertarian Party of Wisconsin. You have done a lot, Jim.
Well, thank you. I've been kind of busy, but there's a lot more to do.
Absolutely.
And I was doing some of that on the 17th of October. We went down to support Occupy Madison, and thinking they were going to be evicted, and they weren't. Then we went to the sing-along, and then we found out that Representative Nass was having a committee hearing for the Assembly Colleges and Universities Committee trying to eliminate affirmative action in the admissions to the UW system. We were told that you couldn't have any signs. Could videotape, but can't have any signs. Well, I happened to be carrying a sign that recognizing the work of Ben Mazel, and on it had Article 1, Section 4 of the Wisconsin Constitution, the right of the people to peacefully assemble and to consult for the common good and to petition the government shall never be abridged. So I was holding that, and they announced no signs, and I continued to hold that. The sergeant at arms came over and asked me to put the sign down, and I said I had a constitutional right to hold that and was not going to comply. They sent an officer of the Capitol Police over and asked the same question. It's a very, very polite individual. Asked if there was anything he could say to have me put that down. And I said it was my constitutional right, and I thought it was important to exercise that constitutional right. They asked me to leave the meeting room, and then they handcuffed me and sat me in a chair for 15 minutes, and they wrote out a ticket. And the ticket they wrote out was for disorderly conduct, is what they said. And it's under Administrative Rule 2.14, subparagraph 2, subparagraph K. This is for behavior that individual engages in violent, abusive, indecent, profane, boisterous, unreasonably loud, or otherwise disorderly conduct under circumstances where the conduct tends to cause or provoke a disturbance in public places or private areas in those buildings or facilities managed or leased by the Department of Administration. So that's the ticket I got. I don't think that holding a portion of the Constitution meets any of the definition. We'll be contesting that and taking it up through the court system. Hopefully we'll get an injunction to prevent these people from interfering with other people's constitutional rights to petition their government and to have their free speech. And holding a sign is a free speech issue.
Well,
I heard your I heard your clip, the introduction clip of what the representative from the 30th saying that they had the right to limit speech based on time, place, and manner. And I'm sure that's what they're going to do, but their laws in place presently are not sufficient. And I can tell you about a dismissal of action that occurred yesterday, if you'd like to hear about that.
I would definitely like to hear about it. Before we do that, though, I want you to explain what's going on for people who haven't heard what's going on. Because
okay.
I don't know a lot of media that's actually talking about the arrests and the things that are going on in the Capitol. So give a little synopsis, and then you can go into
dismissal. I'll go back to right after the Occupy the Capitol occurred back in February, March, and there was a lawsuit to reopen the Capitol, and the unions that brought that suit got the Department Administration to agree that they would not harass people who had signs on the ground floor and the first floor of the Capitol. Well, in the Capitol, the Assembly and the Senate and the Supreme Court are all on the second floor, and so we saw that as a movement to try to get take away the free speech area that area has always represented. People could always petition and use their free speech by holding signs in those areas in front of the Assembly and the Senate and the Supreme Court so they could get their message across to people. So we saw that as an effort to try to limit, restrict people's constitutional rights. And since then, we have had people holding signs in the rotunda, and they've taken some tickets, and we've gotten all those dismissed because the district attorney's office in Dean County has better things than to try to pursue people for their constitutional rights. So those tickets have all been dismissed. And some of the people, Jeremy and Jenna and Joe and Jason and a whole bunch of people have been willing to step forward, taken out of the room, be handcuffed. I don't know why they have to handcuff everybody, and they're handcuffing us behind our backs, which is a very, very uncomfortable position, but they're authoritarians trying to exert control over people and to get us to stop exercising our constitutional rights. But they've been taking tickets in the rotunda, and then we took tickets in some of the committee meetings, and they finally stopped for a while when the Senate chief clerk wrote a memo saying, hey, there's constitutional issues here, and you probably really shouldn't be trying to get people arrested or arresting people and ticketing them for peacefully holding a sign. So they stopped ticketing us for a while, but now after the recall elections, I think they have been emboldened by the fact that they are still in control of all three branches of our government. And now they're coming forward with this and saying, oh, yeah, we can limit the time, the place, and the manner in which you can exercise your free speech rights. And that's why they're ticketing us again. People have I was ticketed, and a number of people that same day were ticketed in that assembly meeting I talked about. And now they've also been ticketing people in the Assembly and Senate galleries for peacefully and quietly holding signs, and also for videoing the activities. They don't want people to see what's really happening. They want everybody to rely on just the Wisconsin Eye broadcast, which is very limited and shows you only a small portion of the action. It doesn't show you the people smirking and the Democrats stand up and say, this is a special job session. Where are your bills having to do with jobs? When you sit up in the gallery, you can see the Republicans kind of smirking. It was a big joke. They never had any intention to create jobs. They knew that jobs were an important issue to people. They said they were going to create jobs, and they said that just for the purpose of getting elected. But we get off the issue there. I'll let you ask the questions now.
Okay. Well, I was just going to let you go. I thought, okay, we'll just let you keep talking because it's important that people hear what's going on. Now, are constitutional issues an irritant to Walker, do you think? And do you think the Fitzgerald's handling in the do you think it's an irritant to Walker? And what do you think of the Fitzgerald's handling of the nonviolent protesters?
The these people are acting like authoritarians, and authoritarians believe that men rule, not the law should rule. And so the Constitution is very very inconvenient for them, and so they'll ignore it. We saw that when, and they ignore the laws. We saw that when they were ramming things through earlier, and then they got the short notice, inadequate notice under open meetings law for that one meeting where they were trying to eliminate collective bargaining. That went through the court system, and a highly partisan Supreme Court by a 4-3 vote basically said that the legislature is not subject to the open meetings law, even though the law says that they are. And so when laws are inconvenient, they get a way around them. It was inconvenient that there were some limitations on corporations, and at the U.S. At the federal level, they got the Supreme Court to declare that corporations were people, so that they could spend unlimited amounts of money. At the state level, they've gotten rid of the limitations on the open meetings law for the legislature. And now, the way I see this coming, since they had backed away from ticketing people for holding their signs expressing their First Amendment rights, and now they're talking about, and now they're issuing tickets and talking about, oh, yeah, we can limit these things, I think the fix is in. We know that they went and talked to Prosser and put pressure on Prosser to bring out the Supreme Court decision saying that the legislature is not subject to the open meetings law. There was that kind of pressure. The pressure built up so much that Prosser went and put his hands on the neck of Justice Bradley. And unfortunately, he hasn't been prosecuted for that. But I'm sure there's more conversation, and they've probably put the fix in. They know that if a case goes up to the Wisconsin Supreme Court on the issue of holding signs in the gallery of the assembly, that the four people put on that Supreme Court by the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Congress, with all the big spending they did, they will vote to basically say, we don't have those constitutional rights anymore. They're just going to erase our rights. And that's one of the reasons I've been off and on talking also, that we shouldn't just limit our talk about recalls to the governor and certain legislators. We really need to talk about recalling some of the Supreme Court justices too.
Well, speaking of the Supreme Court justices, where do Crooks, Gableman, and Ziegler stand on free speech issues? Are they also pressured along with Prosser?
Crooks is kind of the swing guy. I mean, he went with Abramson and Bradley on the open meetings issue. He's a decent individual who will look at things. He's not been bought and paid for, from what I can tell. And so, but the other ones, Gableman and Prosser and Ziegler and Rogensack, they pretty much support the corporate agenda, from what I can tell.
Okay, and now I'm going to go back to the state statute, because I think you mentioned one of them, but the state statute says that people are allowed to silently videotape. The assembly rules say that you can't, and wasn't it Assembly Majority Leader Jeff Fitzgerald, who, by the way, is now running for U.S. Senate, who said that the assembly rules trump the state statutes? How does that work in court?
There again, you come down to the authoritarian attitude, like, well, we're in charge here. You know, and their attitude is, we got elected and we winner-take-all elections, and we now own the government. We can do whatever we want with it. They see government as something to be owned and controlled, as opposed to a service to the people, I think. So, and if they have the Supreme Court in their pocket, he might be right. But all the more reason for people to rise up and say, this is not right. They need to read the Constitution. They need to say that any injustice to one is injustice to all, and any taking away of any of our rights is a very, very serious thing, because rights go away and it's very hard to get them back. Unfortunately, in some of these things, Fitzgerald might be right, but I'm going to continue to put nearly full time into opposing this, and we ask that other people show up at the Capitol next Tuesday, the Assembly is going to be in session again, and we're calling that Constitution Carry Day. We're encouraging people to show up, carry sections of the Constitution. Article 1, Section 4 talks about the right to assembly and petition the government. Article 1, Section 3 is free speech for the Wisconsin Constitution. And of course, the U.S. Constitution, the First Amendment, is the free speech issue. Joe, the Facebook individual that called Joe Biddy has really written some very good stuff. He was up in the Assembly Gallery wearing a necklace that was a picture of a cross, and it had a Bible passage on it, and it had love written on it, and they actually removed him from the gallery, handcuffed him, and wrote a ticket for him for displaying a sign. And so I know a number of people that are going to show up with more religious pictures and symbols on next Tuesday, and we're going to see if they will actually arrest and ticket people for holding pictures of Jesus.
That's nuts. I'm sorry.
Well, they would be. Well, we're hoping that, you know, that people will wake up and see what the true character of these individuals are, they're just going to do whatever they can do and get away with, and they don't care if it's legal or not. That's not a restraint, because they understand that by the time they're caught, they will have accomplished what they wanted to do, and for the most part, for these types of crimes against the Constitution, there's inadequate remedies. They're not going to be adequately punished for having undermined our government and our culture. That's unfortunate, but that's the way it is.
Well, it's true. It is. Who is behind this? Is this the Walker Fitzgerald family? Are they the people trying to suppress the First Amendment rights?
Yes, and when you look, there's 27 new Republican assemblymen, and most of them were elected kind of as the Tea Party people with backings from the Koch brothers and the large corporations that have been financing all the right-wing and corporatist think tanks and supporting this organization called ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. And a lot of the legislation we're seeing is coming out of that council, and it's funded by large corporations and ultra-right-wing individuals for the purpose of getting rid of a lot of our constitutional rights. They're basically getting rid of the middle class in this country, and they're taking the approach that might makes right, not right makes might.
Well, I'm going to go back to Supreme Court for a moment. Now, there's talk or a rumor that Jim Sensenbrenner would like Crooks to retire and have the Fitzgerald brothers or Walker appoint Sensenbrenner to the state Supreme Court. What kind of justice would Sensenbrenner be?
Oh, jeez. I hadn't heard that. You've ruined my day.
I'm sorry. I promise when I come down to Madison, I'll buy you some coffee or something to make up for it.
Okay. That would be just appalling. We would lose the last moderate individual on our seven-person court. And, a vacancy, then the governor gets to appoint an interim individual who has to stand for election at the next spring election when there isn't another regularly scheduled Supreme Court race. So... the power of the incumbency, once somebody's in office, even if they just were appointed, and if there's big right-wing money behind them, that individual certainly could be reelected. Elected to those positions. But people just need to wake up, and they must have to realize that the right-wing agenda has been being implemented since Reagan's day, and when you look at what's happened is that we've lost ground. The poor and middle class in this country have lost ground. A huge amount of wealth has and power has gravitated to the very top 2/10 of 1% of the 400 families that own more than half of the country does. It's appalling, and it's changing the nature of America profoundly. So we've got to wake up and say they've been doing this sort of thing. They've been shipping jobs and money out of the country. They've been destroying our infrastructure. Basically, we've got to stop them.
And a little side note about the Sensenbrenner, just to let people know, if you haven't heard yet, Scott Fitzgerald is looking to run for a Sensenbrenner seat. So that's very possible that whole scenario might play out.
Oh, my.
Now, the Dems...
Scott and Fitzgerald in Congress and Jeff running for U.S. Senate.
I know. It's I guess it's a good thing they're focusing on that, because apparently they can't focus on that and do the sessions at the same time. That's why we only had three this month and one last month. So maybe if they keep focusing on stuff with their campaigns, they'll stop putting some of these crap bills through the Wisconsin Assembly and Senate. But one can only hope.
The appalling thing that I see when we go down there is they open for their session, and they have the prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance and do all kinds of introductions, and that takes half hour to an hour. And then they immediately break and go into closed caucuses. So we got, 59 or 60 Republican assembly people. They go into a closed caucus in the Grand Army of the Republic Room up in the fourth floor north wing. They close the doors and they decide everything that's going to happen. So we've got, and they'll do whatever the majority of their caucus says to do, and they come out in lockstep. They vote that way for the most part. There's hardly ever a situation when they don't all vote as a block. And so there's really no meaningful debate that occurs on the Assembly and Senate floors. You have the Democrats making speeches, but you hardly ever have Republicans replying as to why they think the legislation is good legislation. They will just have someone speak minimally about it, and then they will vote, and they vote straight party lines. So we don't know what the reasons are for a lot of this legislation, unless we dig deeper, and then when you dig into it, you find a lot of the legislation, again, is coming from ALEC, which is the large corporations backing these things to create more wealth and power for themselves. On the floor the other night, when they were considering the Assembly Resolution 17, which was brought by 28 of the Democrats, basically was going to acknowledge people's rights to their First Amendment capability of speech and holding signs, and that the Republicans voted that down. But Representative Hebel, a Democrat from Sun Prairie, made a speech, and he read something out of the Gulag Archipelago, and basically said that there was a meeting, and someone mentioned Stalin, and they all started applauding, and this is the Soviet Union. And several minutes went by, and they're all wondering, oh, how do we stop this sort of thing? And after 10 minutes of applauding, finally, the manager of a local factory abruptly stopped and sat down. And everybody quickly stopped applauding Stalin and sat down also. And it turned out then, a little bit later, that the secret police were in the meeting, arrested, and sentenced to 10 years of hard labor, the guy that stopped clapping first. So Hebel was trying to make the point that they're all being forced basically to go along with things that they don't like, and that there's obviously fear on the part of the Republicans that if they don't comply, they're going to have a Tea Party or go after them in a primary, and they're going to lose their jobs. But they're selling us out just in order to protect their jobs, and it's not unlike the fear that occurred back in the Soviet Union when it wasn't permissible to stop clapping for Stalin. If you did, there are consequences if you were the first. And it was moving, very moving to hear him read those passages and to think about what's happening in our government.
And with that, Jim, I'm going to have to end it here. I'd like you to come back on next week so you can let us know what happened with the assembly and the religious photos.
I'm very happy to talk to you again. I really appreciate your having this show, and I'm glad you found me, and now I found your show. So.
Yes, well, thank you so much for being on, Jim.
We passed it along, and hopefully you've got a lot of listeners this morning.
Well, if nothing else, I'll podcast it later, and we'll get even more, because we really need to keep talking about what's going on, because it starts small, but it gets bigger. So.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
All right, thanks. Thank you. You too, Jim. That was Jim Miller. He is a lawyer out of Madison, and he is working to restore First Amendment rights.
And you are the 99%, and everybody is the 99%.
I'd like to finish out our day talking with Peter Rickman from Occupy Milwaukee. I was going to be a panel, and we ran out of time, so definitely Peter will plan on getting that panel back. But I want you to talk about Occupy Milwaukee and how you guys got started.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Sarah. Well, as you know, I'm sure you and all your listeners know, we live in dark economic times. The richest 1% has 35% of the wealth. In fact, even just the top 10 to 20% of people in this country have more than 85% of the wealth and income. Income and wealth inequality is out of control. We've got a concentration of political and economic power that is unprecedented for this country. Big banks and greedy corporations broke this economy, and no one's held them accountable. And so people are taking to the streets all across the country to force a real public conversation on these issues, to stand up and fight back against the power and wealth of corporations, and to rebuild an economic and political system that works for your everyday working class person. So that's why we're joining with the folks on Occupy Wall Street to build a local chapter of the movement, if you will. And so we've been taking to the streets now for weeks, and we've got another big rally march coming up here on Saturday that we're really excited about.
All right, well, hold on to that thought, and I'm going to bring in Mark Banks from Occupy Chicago. Welcome back, Mark.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Pretty good. I was just telling Peter that we don't have the time to do the panel. I'm going to have you guys talk a little bit about what's going on and what you guys have coming up, and we'll get the panel on in next week, maybe we can get that, because I really want people to hear more about it. But you guys had some problems coming up the last couple weekends. You had some problems. Can you give a little synopsis of what happened to you guys in Occupy Chicago?
Sure. Well, we held a couple of direct action events. Ultimately, the whole thing here is we're trying to get an encampment spot. It's something that Chicago has been denied up to this point. So it depends on how you want to, if you want to frame it as a problem. I'm not 100% sure I agree with that. We did get, part of the planned events had civil disobedience as a sort of one of the contingencies that we knew was going to be a possibility. So the arrests, to some extent, were anticipated, or to a very large extent, were anticipated. And we feel like they did generate a lot of the public outcry and public support that we've been receiving as a result of it. However, of course, it has been a challenge in terms of the logistics on the ground and the relationship with the city. We did experience more than 300 arrests over the last 2 weekends. And we also made an attempt yesterday to try to take some state property. It was a non-arrestable event that we planned. It was kind of small scale, and it turned out that the state took a really hard stance against us, brought a bunch of officers out, and forced us to leave. So there's been some difficulty with finding a permanent spot for ourselves.
Well, and Peter, you guys are having problems with Occupy Milwaukee having that too, aren't you?
Yeah, I think it really demonstrates that the Occupy Wall Street movement and its local instantiations is really throwing the big banks and greedy corporations that own our politics, own our economy. We're throwing them for a real loop and challenging them in a way that no one has yet done here, certainly not since they broke the economy a few years back. I think the focus needs to be less on the disruptive things that are being thrown our way, because in real movements for social change, we always face repression. We always face people trying to shut us down. The real focus here has to be on why, you know, the law enforcement authorities are coming after the Occupy Wall Street protests around the country. It's because we are challenging the economic and political power of, you know, hedge fund managers and corporate CEOs and bank executives and billionaire plutocrats. We are galvanizing the 99% across the country to stand up and fight back. So I'm not surprised, and by no means is any of this going to stop us from building a real movement for social and economic justice, taking to the streets everywhere across the country.
And what do you have planned? We're really short on time, and I'm so sorry, guys. Again, I'll have you back next week, and we'll really get into the into more of a discussion on this. But what do you have planned, Peter, for this weekend coming up?
Well, on Saturday, we are staging a rally and march up on the north side of Milwaukee. The north side of Milwaukee has been one of the most economically hard hit, not only in the last few years, but also going on decades. This is a place where, you know, decent middle-income family-supporting jobs used to be found by the dozens. At, you know, industrial production facilities, white people, black people, brown people, everyone had a shot at a decent middle-class lifestyle. And when the big banks rewrote the rules of the economy to put all of our money into the Wall Street casino, those jobs went the way of the dinosaur. So this is an area that's been incredibly hard hit economically. And so we're taking the Occupy Milwaukee movement up to the north side to rally at Lincoln Park, the corner of Green Bay and Hampton Ave, at noon, before we march to the old Tower Automotive and A.O. Smith site, also called Century City. We're standing up and fighting back for social and economic justice, and this fight goes everywhere. It's the banks in the downtown financial district in Milwaukee. It's the old industrial sites on the north side. It's the foreclosed neighborhoods on the north and south side. We're taking this fight everywhere because the crisis is everywhere. And we definitely encourage folks to come on out and join us on Saturday at noon at Lincoln Park, the corner of Green Bay and Hampton, before we march to the old Tower and A.O. Smith site on the north side of Milwaukee.
And, Mark, what do you guys have planned for Occupy Chicago for this Saturday?
Well, I'm glad to hear what Peter's talking about with it, what they've got going on. We're really in a rebuilding stage right now. We're really low on greens here in Chicago. That is to say, we're low on people who are in a position to conduct civil disobedience and possibly face arrest. So we definitely have a few tricks up our sleeve. We don't have anything large-scale planned for this weekend. We're kind of putting a call out for boots on the ground. We need more people to come out. We've got tremendous support online. I think our Facebook has hit like 31,000 supporters at this point. But we definitely need more people coming down on the ground. We feel like if we can get more bodies, thousands of people, it'll put us into a position where we can conduct ourselves meaningfully in this newly intensified sort of standoff that we find ourselves in with the city. All of our really sort of gentle approaches have been exhausted. I think at this point the only thing that's going to move us forward is a real confrontation of numbers. And so right now we're trying to get more and more people out, and we're in a bit of a planning stage at this point.
Have you guys, and you guys can answer however, have you guys done anything for Sean Olson, the Marine who got injured at the Occupy Oakland riot that the police had last, I think it was a couple nights ago?
Real briefly, I'll just say something then he can chime in. We took a march yesterday. I think there was, around the nation there were solidarity marches. Some were larger than others. I understand that New York's was pretty big, but ours wasn't massive, but we did have a march in solidarity followed by a rally.
Peter, do you have anything planned?
You know, that hasn't been an explicit focus of ours.
Okay.
You know, there's been so much going on here that it's hard to just turn on a dime at the last minute, and by no means is that any comment on, you know, the you know, tragedy that is police repression of someone who I think, you know, would have been lionized in the media as a real American hero for serving this country in the armed services. You know, it's a real comment on where we're at right now in this country, where someone who goes and defends their nation by serving in the military comes home and says they want to have that better country they fought to defend is taken off the streets by repressive activity by law enforcement. We certainly stand in solidarity with him and everyone at Occupy Oakland and all the Occupy Wall Street groups around the country. And we're fighting for one another. And we're going to keep that going. And I'm sure Mr. Olson would support that as well, too, that we just keep on fighting in our own necks of the woods.
Right. Well, I am out of time, guys. Thank you so much. We'll have you on next week. I will contact you and confirm that, but we'll have you on next week. We'll have a bigger panel. We'll do a little more in-depth on what's going on. So thank you for being on. It's Peter Rickman from Occupy Milwaukee and Mark Banks from Occupy Chicago.
Thanks for having us on, Sarah.
Well, with that, I'd like to thank everyone for listening to the Sarah Schultz Show today. I'd like to thank my producer, Bill, for all his hard work on the show. You can download the show from iTunes or listen to the archive shows at www.blogtalkradio.com. You can also listen to the Sarah Schultz Show off the Progressive Voices app. And don't forget to tune in this Saturday to Citywide 99.1 FM in Madison. Remember, Wisconsin, forward, together, forward. And I'll see you guys next week. Have a great Halloween.